You're listening to a DM podcast.
Becky and I have been podcasting for about a year, and it's all just been nonsense, just us riffing in a room together. It was hit and miss. Some of them were really funny. Some of them were just very indulgent. At a certain point, I think we realized that we work really good when we're ganging up on people.
Hi, I'm Jules, and this is Stocks. On today's Behind the Podcast, we're talking with Lord Cameron James, a prolific podcaster who's responsible for a number of podcasts such as The Blank Slate, Mic Check, Total Reboot, Finding Drago, Finding Desperado, and the Becky and Cam Hotline.
We wanted to pick his brain on co-host chemistry. We're, what, 20 episodes in now? Mm-hmm. Feel like it got a format? Feel like we know what we're doing? But how can we get better as a duo? Who better to talk to than Cam?
The co-host with the mostest. So, yeah, we've been listening to all of his podcasts before even this show came about, and huge fan of his different ones.
What a pleasure, huh? I mean, it's so diverse. He's done fully scripted podcasts, like the Finding Drago, Finding Desperado podcast, investigative pieces, improv with
Becky Lucas.
So a little bit of this, a little bit of that was complete improv, and now the Becky and Cam Hotline is improv within a structure, and something in between with Total Reboot podcast. Done it all.
That's right. Him and Alexi obviously have had a few shows together.
Yeah, and there's so much fun to listen to, right?
Yeah, you can definitely see hear the chemistry between the two of those. They're two guys who really, really enjoy each other's company and points of view. They cover a number of different things. I mean, if you want to go deep dive on certain movies, they're huge movie nerds, and they've got a great point of view on each of those sorts of films that they cover, particularly in the case of Total Reboot, doing sequels, all that kind of any franchise thing.
What I love is that Cam's found a way to basically guarantee that he spends lots of time with his two best friends and gets paid to do it. Pretty cool.
Absolutely. They've just mastered the art of finding niche topics and turning that into big audiences.
And like, I think that's a pretty good outcome. If you're talking about why would you get into podcasting now, you want to do it, you want to have a voice, the barriers to entry are low. But if you can get the dream is to hang out with your friends and to talk shit and to have an audience and to be remunerated for it, sounds good.
Sounds pretty good to me. Him and Alexi have managed to turn their podcast into a franchise of their own. The Finding franchise, we'll call it. So they've done, as we said, Finding Drago and Finding Desperado, and there's another Finding coming up soon to be released. So yeah, stay tuned. So it's hard to know where to start with Cameron James. We usually ask people to give us the elevator pitch of one of their podcasts. But since you've got so many, why don't we just jump in with Finding Desperado?
So Finding Desperado is a true crime documentary podcast hosted by two comedians who are not journalists and who are not very good at solving crimes.
Pop culture investigators.
Thank you. That's it. That's the phrase I always forget, and that's the one I should remember. Pop culture investigators. Myself and Alexi Toliopoulos. And yeah, that's it. We found a weird mystery of a mysterious fake Guinness World Record, and we are determined to solve it. And that's the show.
Okay. And this wasn't your first investigation. The first one was Finding Drago.
That's right. Yes, Finding Drago, which is the same premise, but we found a weird book on the internet that was written about a side character from the movie Rocky IV, and it was written under a pseudonym, and we wanted to find out who the real author was.
Brilliant. So I guess before we dive into the weeds on that, which we're really keen to do, I guess we want to set it up. Jules and I have been doing this podcast for, what, a few months now?
Yep.
Still trying to work out how to co-host a show together, we figured we'd talk to the man who is the greatest co-host of podcasts in Australia.
Prolific podcaster in Australia.
Cam James, give us some advice on how to do it properly.
Oh, the co-host king. It's a pleasure to be here.
Or the host with the co-hosts.
The co-host with the co-most? Sounds good.
You rank your favourite other co-hosts. But
No, it depends on how they treat me during the week. It's a sliding scale that they're on. I can help you out any way you want. I understand it's difficult sometimes to know what the dynamic is supposed to be, what the chemistry is. I'm here to help. Any questions you have, fire away.
Dynamic, I suppose, and chemistry. I mean, the Alexi Toliopoulos and Becky Lucas are your two main ones currently.
Yeah, my two side pieces. That's right.
How long have you been with them?
Exclusive. Alexi and I have been podcasting together for 5 or 6 years. We used to have a movie podcast years ago that doesn't exist anymore called The Blank Slate, and there was no real premise to it. We would just watch a movie with our friend Henry, and then we'd talk about it. And then from out of that, our friendship blossomed, and we decided that something we were really interested in was talking incredibly nichely about pop culture. So our first thing we did, just the two of us, was a podcast called Mic Check, which ran for whatever, like 50 episodes or something. And the premise of that show was that we would only watch the films, appearances, and Saturday Night Live episodes of Mike Myers, the comedian Mike Myers. It was called Mic Check. And it was a very clever name. And even though it's incredibly niche, bizarrely, it did well. It kind of popped a little bit on a, you know, like a small scale. Will Anderson really liked it, so he would share it a lot, and then he eventually guested on it. Hamish and Andy did the same thing, and Rove McManus. And that was like the first time anyone had paid attention to us, and we couldn't believe it because it was such a bizarre little, like, who cares? It's a Mike Myers podcast. But it connected on some strange way.
How did you get 50 episodes out of that?
Oh, we stretched it. We stretched what an appearance could be. So anytime he presented an award at like the Oscars or whatever the hell, we counted that and we would talk about that for an hour.
Part one, two, and three on that performance.
Yep, exactly. We would break down things. We'd do multiple episodes on, you know, like The Love Guru or Gold Member or whatever, and just really dig into the weeds of it. Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was so much fun because I like Mike Myers and I like comedies. So it was very easy to talk about.
Yeah.
And also the fact that it was so niche and strange and people were still listening made it even funnier to me.
Yeah.
And the fact that we would get Hamish Blake on and he was only allowed to talk about Wayne's World and wasn't allowed to talk about his career or anything else was very funny to me. That we were just wasting his time.
How long until it started picking up steam and you started to get this interest from these legendary comedians?
It was probably like 20 weeks or something of us, maybe even less, maybe 15-ish weeks of us just kind of seemingly talking to ourselves and our small listenership. And then I think someone must have told Hamish and Andy about it, and then they started talking about it on their radio show, and then from there it kind of grew. But it definitely peaked. It definitely hit a point where we were like, we can't talk about this anymore. We've run out of ideas and we've plateaued on our listenership level. We need to maybe get a little bit less niche.
Right.
So, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so less niche into finding Drago small book about a character.
Yeah, okay. As I'm saying that, I'm realizing pretty much everything we've done has been for... seemingly for an incredibly small audience, but has somehow found listeners. I don't know how. But.
So how did that one come about? I mean, did Alexi find that book, you know, as it's set up in the podcast and kind of bring this idea to you? Or what
so
was the conceit
after
like?
Mic Check, Alexi and I decided we wanted to talk about movies, more movies than the ones that Mike Myers are in. You know, you're a bit sick of Cat in the Hat, a bit sick of View from the Top, all that shit, Austin Powers. So we made a podcast called Total Reboot, which the premise of that show is that we mainly talk about film franchises, sequels, and remakes.
A bottomless well.
A bottomless well, because there's always remakes, there's always franchises, there's whole universes of movies now that are all tied together. In that podcast, we were talking about the Rocky franchise and the Rocky IV episode.
One of the great franchises, by the way. And the greatest. What's your favorite Rocky?
Oh, man. I'm now a Rocky IV guy, but when we did the podcast, I hated it. I was like, this movie sucks. There's a robot in it. This is stupid.
He solves the Cold War.
Now I like it. See, now I've come around on Rocky IV. I think it's actually the best one. But I'm also a Creed guy. Creed 1 and 2. I love those. I love those. They're good films.
They're very good films.
I would say they're films. They're not
they are. Films. Yeah.
When we were doing Rocky 4, in Alexi's research, he found this bizarre book called Drago on Mountains We Stand. And it's written from the perspective of Ivan Drago, the villain from Rocky 4. And it was written by an author called Todd Noy, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and novelist, missing, presumed dead.
Sports journalist.
From Perth?
Sports journalist from Perth, Western Australia. And there was a very detailed bio for Todd Noy. And so we kind of just thought it was funny, and we read the book and it was so small and weirdly written and we just thought it was hilarious. And then it wasn't until we saw the line "missing, presumed dead" that we were like, this is crazy. This is like a weird Ernest Hemingway-esque author. Why haven't we heard of him? And then that kind of started our investigation into who the real person was behind Todd Noy.
And the quality of the writing was really good, wasn't it?
It's pretty good. Yeah. You know, it was kind of funny because we talk about it a bit on the podcast. Some chapters are just like a paragraph long or even less. They're sort of, you know, one chapter I think is 6 words or something. So it's kind of, it sort of seems like a joke when you're reading it. You're like, this
makes everything else seem so bloated.
Yeah, yeah. That's economy of writing. Yeah. That's where the Ernest Hemingway stuff comes in. But, you know, it's pretty well written. And without spoiling the plot of the mystery of Finding Drago, the writer Todd Noy has more books that are available, and they're all pretty well written.
And they're all incredible titles.
They're all great titles. Swarmer, March of the Noxman, Limey and Me, Alabaster Wars. There's a lot. They're all great.
So, I mean, like, how far in down the rabbit hole are you before you start to think, like, hang on, let's just pull up and see what we can do with this?
Yeah, when do you pitch this to ABC? What is it?
That's interesting. Drago is different because Alexi and I, we did a fair bit of just research for our own fun. We were just kind of, we'd send each other things and go, look at this crazy thing. There's no way this is real. And then we'd dig deeper and go, I think this guy is a pseudonym. I think it might be one of these 5 people. And we'd narrow it down. And then we thought it was a fun idea. Alexi did a small version of it as a university assignment. He was still studying at Afters at the time. And so that was a 10-minute version became his, like, final year product or whatever, his final year assessment. And once we heard that, we thought we should pitch this to ABC. And weirdly, they bought it pretty much right off the bat, even though we had no experience making true crime or really documentary at all. But I think we lucked out in the fact that the EP, Tom Wright, was just sort of very charmed by this crazy premise. And probably Alexi, like, you know, Alexi's a very charming guy. So I think people just generally fall in love with him a little bit.
He is very likable.
Yeah, yeah. And then from there, I think, because we've obviously done a second season and we're working on a third at the moment, there's a lot of research that goes in before we pitch.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's multiple stories now. So season 2, I think we had 3 possible stories that we were going to investigate. And then we finally found the one that seemed to have the most life or the most.
Right. Okay. Details. So you went with 3 and just.
Yeah. Picked 1 in the end. I think we soft pitched 2 to the ABC. And then they seemed more interested in one than the other. And luckily that's the one that we thought there's more.
And that had lightning. That was lightning in the bottle. It was incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, it could have gone either way. Because at a certain point, you know, I'd say we research up until possibly 3 episodes worth of content before we pitch. But the back 3, I mean, we don't know what could happen.
Yeah.
You know, by the time we get to episode 4, it could be over. Or you could find out the guy is dead or,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
yeah. Or he's crazy.
I love that there's these little, like, kind of mysteries on the internet that just someone's put out there and just,
yeah.
You know, random people might pick up.
All these movie subculture websites, yeah. And so spaces, bizarre. Incredible.
Well, even the, you know, even Finding Desperado, the kind of tie-in, I suppose, with Total Reboot, I remember listening to that and you were talking about Silence of the Lambs and that kind of thing. And the way you've weaved that into the
And the serendipity of someone related to Todd Noy becoming an expert character reference witness in Desperado was like, oh, behind the mind. Well, how do you put it? It was you were Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, yeah. Todd Noy became our Hannibal Lecter. Well, yeah, okay. A little, pull back the curtain a little bit. That was one of the first ideas that we had when we knew what the story was going to be for Finding Desperado. We were talking about, you know, what? Because we wanted to work with him again, with Todd Noy, because he was so funny and so interesting and he's so good on the mic.
Yeah.
And he kept spitting out these pearls of absolute, like, semi-nonsense but semi-wisdom.
Yeah.
And we thought, we got to get that back again, but what could he be? And once we kind of figured out that he could be Hannibal Lecter, we almost built the whole season around that, just going, you know, isn't that, that's always the best part of Silence of the Lambs is Hannibal's in it for like 8 minutes and he pushes the story along and pushes Clarice closer to the killer. It's perfect.
And wins the Academy Award.
Yeah, wins the Oscar.
Best supporting. Like, come on.
And that's kind of what we did. We kind of went, we got to recreate that as much as we can.
Clever. Mm. So were you and Alexi friends before you started doing podcasts, or is that how you became friends?
Through comedy. I think we're both, stand-ups. I still do stand-up. Alexi doesn't do it so much anymore, but we met through that scene and then just sort of both had things in common. Actually, how did you guys meet? What's your story?
Actually, I remember the first time I met Stocks. A friend of mine was driving us around to a common mate's party. We might need to cut this, actually. I'm thinking
Say no names.
Anyway, so this guy was driving and maybe had one or two, and we were trying to find the location of the party. Drove down the road before, sat nav and everything, and then saw the guys. He went to do a three-point turn, hit reverse rather than drive, and just went straight back into a pole in front of these like cool guys we hadn't met before. And I just remember seeing Stocks like killing himself laughing. It's probably the appropriate response.
Been friends ever since.
Oh, there you go. That's an inbuilt history. That's what it's all about, kind of having those drunk nights out or those weird experiences.
Yeah, and we'd always just flick each other podcasts back in the day and just bits of pop culture, and then went, well,
that's it. Yeah,
that's how we ended up here.
Well, yeah, it's similar with Lexi and I. It's just you have things in common, and then you just go, well, how can we ruin this friendship? Let's turn it into a professional relationship.
I mean, and the amount that you guys record, like with the Total Reboot, I mean, this is a weekly kind of podcast, and it's not just like, shoot the shit light stuff. It's really going deep on these films and having other people involved as well. Sometimes. And then balancing that with the full-on investigations. I mean, what's this like?
Yeah, it's pretty psycho. Sometimes, because for Total Reboot, it's a weekly podcast. And we try to make it high quality. We want it to say something about what we're talking about and about pop culture and about whatever the genre or the franchise is that we're exploring. I find that Alexi is just naturally, that's just how he thinks and talks. So oftentimes I'll watch the movie, I'll think of a couple of things I want to say, and then when I show up to his place to record, he just turns on the tap and it all comes out, and he's just got, all of a sudden he's got an essay and a thesis and he's a statement, and I just ride that wave and agree a lot, chip in, throw a few jokes in. Sometimes expand on things he said, but it's all him. He's like he's a genuine film critic. He's really good at it.
It's incredible, isn't it? And I think you two are two of the best laughers as well. Oh, like you're really good at laughing in a way that sells each other. And I'm not saying it's ingenuous in any way, but you're both fantastic laughers.
Yeah.
And I think it really makes a big difference.
Oh, I've never thought of that. That's interesting.
Yeah, we had a young fellow who does a rugby podcast, and he was on TV for the first time this week.
Yeah.
And he went in with a guy who really oversold the laugh on the stuff, and it was like, oh, thank you so much. That helped me so much in terms of
it's
being
such
comfortable.
A dream, hey?
Yeah, but you guys have just got this incredible chemistry where it's just the two of you. I mean, we've got horrible laughs, but you guys have got incredible laughs. And even some of the stuff you put on your socials of him dancing the other day, I was like, how much fun do you guys have?
He's so much fun. I'm very lucky to work with him because he just hasn't got he hasn't got like a negative bone in his body. He can find the joy in everything, almost too much sometimes.
Oh, he loves the most niche, dank, like subculture genres of
film. It's so weird. Or even like, if there's a film that, for example, we just watched the movie Twilight. I don't know if you've seen it. I was too old to see it at school. I was out of school when it came out. So I missed it completely. I saw it for the first time this year. And
I was peak age. I was a tween in high school when it came out. Just exploring love for the first time.
I think
I'm the youngest one here by many years. For the record.
Were you a werewolf or a vampire?
Yeah.
Definitely Jacob. I don't know.
Team Jacob. Well, yeah, me too. It sucks, but Alexi loved it and was like waxing lyrical about it, being like, oh, it's beautiful. It's like a timeless love story and all this shit. And I was like, are you serious? Like,
finding
do
the Shakespearean
actually love
parallels
it?
And everything.
There's no way you actually love it, but he does. He just finds the positivity in everything.
That comes through in Desperado. You're watching some of the films by Sidney Ling.
Yeah.
And he's just going, look at this. No, no, no. And then you're, it seems to be contagious. Going, look at him come in. He's like a movie star.
That is
just,
true. I can get swept up in it. If someone's earnestly talking about something, I can definitely get swept up in it. But most of those Sidney Ling movies do suck in hindsight. Now that I've had a bit of distance from it, I can look at them and go, I think they're pretty bad. But yeah, yeah, when you're there and Alexi's talking at you, you get caught up in the moment.
Were there any kind of production lessons that you've learned, such as, like, you know, not wearing a wire when you're recording stuff for the ABC?
Oh, man, so many lessons. Especially because we made Finding Desperado during the first bout of COVID in Australia. So lockdown was going on. The ABC was locked down. We weren't allowed in there. So we were recording it in Marrickville in Sydney in a shipping container that has been converted into, quote unquote, a soundproof studio space.
Right.
It was not soundproof.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like the rain on the tin roof kind of scenario.
Not only that, but it was right on Victoria Roads, which is a very busy road in Marrickville. So you can hear cars, trucks, motorbikes, construction outside, just the beeping of forklifts and stuff. It was crazy that we even decided to do it there. But anyway, we didn't have, there was no budget really. It was so low budget and there was no other option. So we're forced to do it. And as a result, we really lent into the soundscape and the sound design on that season. And I think it's really elevated from season one. And that really helped because we just thought, well, this sounds like, when you hear these tracks raw, it sounds like we're in a shipping container on a busy road. But if we get our sound designer to add music,
the voiceover work was sensational.
Yeah. And then just every, like, little sonic details that he would add, like the turning of pages and footsteps walking on sand and, I don't know, creaking of doors, little things like that elevated it so much. Every time I heard the first draft of an episode, I couldn't believe that we made it.
And you had Pia Miranda playing Marilyn Monroe's mystery daughter.
Totally. That was a dream come true.
So how do you approach someone like that for that type of work? Ooh. What's the pitch?
I guess we're lucky that we have the ABC as a brand behind us because it legitimizes us a little bit.
And Alexi's healthy obsession with
looking for Ali Brandy.
He loves looking for Ali Brandy. I think he's met her. He met P. Miranda and he met Melina Marchetta, who wrote the book, on something. I don't know what it was. I think maybe that... Remember that Rove McManus-hosted movie show that was on Channel 9 or something?
Oh, for a minute. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's not... I don't think it exists anymore, but Alexi had a job on that as a researcher. And as a result, he met P. Miranda and then he met Melina through that. And so he had one point of contact. Then we were able to say, it's for the ABC. There was a bit of budget to pay her. It seemed legit. But once we were on the line with her over Zoom and she could see that we were just in like a shipping container and we were like, hi, like crowding into the shot and waving at her and stuff. I think there was a moment where she was like, what the hell is this? And then, of course, the script that we gave her to read is crazy because it's from the memoir of a woman who believes she's Marilyn Monroe's daughter.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of having to explain to her what the vibe was. And she would say things like, these sentences don't make sense. And we'd go, we know, but you have to say it exactly as it's written.
Yeah, it wasn't us who wrote this.
Yeah, we didn't write it.
It's not a script. Yeah.
Someone else did. And we want you to leave all the mistakes in because that's part of it. It's very hard to explain the tone, but we're laughing at it and with it. And we're celebrating it at the same time. Yeah, but she was great. She was so cool, so funny. And there was a moment when we were listening to her read out, you know, this story of a young Italian-American woman who's living in the shadow of her mother, that Alexi and I both realized we were making Looking for Ali Brandy, because that's exactly what that book and movie is about.
Right. Yeah.
And it was pure coincidence. We didn't cast her because of that connection, but we were just sort of sitting there going, this is exactly the themes of Looking for Ali Brandy, and we have Josie Ali Brandy. This is crazy. Alexi cried, I think.
The subconscious. As usual. So production-wise, I guess, post-production-wise, how does it work? I know you've both got experience in the space. Yeah. Is someone driving the edits? Is someone, or you? Is it a collaborative process? How do you guys do that?
It's pretty collaborative. I think season one, Drago, Alexi was more involved in the post because It was kind of his story. He led it. He led the research. He was the main narrator. And he had a lot of ideas, like tonally and aesthetically, that he wanted it to sound like and feel like. So he was, I would leave kind of after I'd recorded with him, and then I would just hear the drafts. Season two, I guess it's fair to say it was more my story and more my leading. And I really had this tone I wanted to hit of the like 90s thriller genre. So Silence of the Lambs and Talented Mr. Ripley and stuff like that. So I was sitting in on edits and listening to interviews multiple times and making all the cuts, and I found that I loved it. I used to work in post-production in television and right after uni in film on a movie that no one has seen, but you can watch it on Disney Plus. It's called Walking with Dinosaurs 3D, and it's bad, but I worked on it. So, yeah, watch it.
And you're still getting the royalties from Disney?
No royalties.
No back end.
No, I got no points on it. I should have got points. And so but it had been a long time since I'd worked in post-production. But this, it gave me a whole new love for it. I kind of realized that is directing in many ways, as you kind of listening back to all your takes and shaping it and turning it into something and moving things around. And now I love it. I kind of do it on the Hotline show with Becky too.
Yes. Like, yeah. I know you drive that.
Yeah. Blake, who records with us, will obviously assemble everything and edit everything. And he's like, he's great. He's a genius. But I love to listen to it before he's edited it and give my notes, because I kind of get some enjoyment out of it now.
How do you give your notes? I mean, are you just like kind of, because when we do it, I just look at the Dropbox file and scroll through and just start to try and get roughly, I think, where the second was. And
yeah, I kind of do the same thing. Time codes, usually I just go from here to here, let's cut it, or let's move that to the start. That's the strongest part. That's a hook, blah, blah, blah. It's all like pretty rough, and I don't know. I still don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I don't know. I kind of like being involved in the, like, getting my hands dirty. Like work when you're doing it, which I like.
Yeah, you actually like finishing up a product at the end, and you've done something, you've got something to show for it.
Yeah.
When you were doing, like, back when it was the blank slate, I mean, who was kind of doing most of that kind of stuff back then?
And we all hated doing it back then. Yeah, so we would all take turns doing it, and I stopped doing it for a long time. I was lazy, and I was just like, I don't want to edit the fucking podcast. Let's just put it up unedited, like raw, leave in all the weird pauses and the bits where we get actors' names wrong and then correct ourselves. But yeah, now that I'm 5 or 6 years deep into doing podcasts, and actually probably since talking to you a fair bit, Stocksy, about this sort of stuff, I realized that, you know, this is a medium where you can afford to be tighter, and editing can be part of it. And
respect the audience's time.
And, it's their time. They're putting you in their ears once or twice a week. And, you know, it's a big commitment to say, can you just listen to me for a bit? So they may as well get a good product.
Yeah. No, you guys are doing good stuff. I mean, yeah, that's how we're trying to approach it now, is if you want an editor, hop on Fiverr and just get an editor. But try to produce the show. And there's something to that. I mean, what we do is we often come in on the weekend, sit in the studio, have a few beers, and go through and really try and edit the show sometimes.
The first few for us, it was highly, highly edited. And it was just, you know, getting used to hearing yourself talk.
Totally.
Asking questions properly, not sort of like drifting off and rambling off and leaving it open and all that kind of thing.
That was a big thing, huh? We'd ask a question and then you just should stop and let the person answer. But then you go, but do you think so?
Keep going.
And trail off into this little feeble little double question.
It's hard to avoid that. I reckon I still do that sometimes. And Alexi and I are just starting to add interviews into our Total Reboot podcast. We've decided, because we had a lot of fun doing it on Drago and Desperado, and we want to get better at it. And we've just recorded a couple of interviews with some filmmakers, and I listened back and went, yeah, I'm shit at this, I think. Like, it takes a while for me to warm up, 10 minutes in maybe, and then I start getting pretty concise and good. But that first 10 minutes, I'm waffling on, I'm talking too much.
Yeah.
Asking questions that are obvious. Oh, it's so hard.
And you don't know, like, I mean, with podcasting, I think a lot of people appear on different podcasts around and you don't know, you know, what stories they've already told and, and you know, what you're sort of repeating or what.
People will repeat stuff, though. Yeah. I've heard people say the same story 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, the junkets and I've got a book to promote. And well, we've had that with, we're interviewing podcasters and some of them are reading scripts.
Yeah,
and then
right.
you get them on and we've had to edit. Those have been the ones that are hard to edit is the people who read scripts who speak beautifully. Mm. And we really struggle. If you put a piece of paper in front of Jules or I, it's a nightmare. So we respect the craft, but they're the toughest people to interview because there's so many, they've got so many ums, ahs, you knows, this and this. And that's, those have been tough ones to edit, surprisingly.
What's it been like for you getting the guests? I mean, did you have a kind of hit list of people that you wanted to speak to?
On Reboot?
Yeah.
No, we kind of thought, let's go in a bit loose and just add interviews if we feel like it. Every now and then we'll chuck up a 20-minute, 30-minute interview with somebody if we can get them. Mm. And then we didn't do anything for a long time. We just, because it's weird approaching people sometimes. But then a friend of ours, this guy Blake Howard, who's a film podcaster, he put up this podcast series recently about the movie Zodiac. You know the movie Zodiac?
Oh, yeah, Fincher. Movie?
Great movie. And he interviewed like everyone involved in the film, a lot of the actors, a lot of the like the screenwriter. He also got high profile fans of that film, like Guillermo del Toro, on to talk about it and stuff. And I just was, every week I was gobsmacked at his guest list. Like, how did you get these people? And he just said, everyone's kind of in lockdown now.
Yeah.
If you just hit them up on social media and be really polite, and be like, I'm a big fan, I'd love to talk to you for half an hour, they'll most likely do it. And so that's kind of what I've been doing. I've just been seeing people and going, I'd like to talk to them. I'll just ask.
That's a good space for you guys.
It's not bad. Hey, because if you're only doing it every now and then, that's cool, you know, and it's just a, no pressure. It can be a half-hour chat, talk to actors and filmmakers and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, and most people, I think, if you're really nice and go, hey, I love your work, I'd love to talk to you for half an hour, they'll probably say yes. I mean, mind you, we haven't gone to like Leonardo DiCaprio or anyone like that. It's,
I don't know. Well, you're too old and you're male. But yeah.
So, I mean, getting those kind of people to participate in your podcast is one thing. On the Beck and Cam hotline, you're getting participation from just the general audience. What, I mean, when did this one come about, and what were you two working together to try and think of an angle that might work for this show?
First of all, that was such good segue.
Thank you.
That was really good. That was podcasting right there. That was, when you find a little moment like that, oh, I can see you
can't
played,
see
you played
on
it very
podcasting.
Cool, but I could see in your eyes you were like, yeah, that was smooth. Let's think. Becky and I, we're very good friends. Becky and Alexi are two of my best friends, and I've endless fun with both of them. Becky and I have been podcasting for about a year, and it's all just been nonsense, just us riffing in a room together. It was hit and miss. Some of them were really funny. Some of them were just very indulgent. At a certain point, I think we realized that we work really good when we're ganging up on people. Whenever we had a guest on and it was us versus them, it was very electric because I think we love each other a lot. We also like to fight each other, but we get very, like, I don't know, electric and excited when we're able to focus that attention on some third party. So what we did with the hotline was we thought people can call up with their problems or their issues or a question about their life. They don't get to respond because they're not there. They're leaving it as a voicemail.
Love it.
Then we can use that to talk for 10 minutes or 20 minutes about them and about their weird life. And it can be anything. It can be genuine help. It can be real stories from both our lives. It can be an attack on them, or it can become a role play where we assume the characters in the story and sort of try
become
to
a skit
act it
almost.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost a skit, which is something that we just do when we're out and about on the street anyway. Like, we'll see two people and then just decide to become them for the next 10 minutes and just talk as them. It's actually really obnoxious, and I think people hate it when they're around it, but we get
just
a lot
can't
of enjoyment.
Stand so close to them when you do it.
Yeah, that's probably part of it. And it also was quite natural because we've been doing this sort of thing for years on social media. When we first met, we would do this thing on Twitter where we would basically do an AMA, or we'd put a call out to like our minimal fans, whoever they were, and say, ask us a question and we'll answer it together. And we would do it on Twitter, and then we started doing it on Instagram. So it's kind of a natural growth from there. And now it's official and it comes out weekly.
You're very good at a pylon. You too.
Oh, we love a pylon.
It's sort of, you'll say something and Becky will take the last two words of it and repeat and then roll on. It's almost like some improv class. It's incredible. But just to watch you guys pile onto people.
Sometimes, yeah.
And as so you said, they have no right of reply. So it's just glorious.
They don't get to say anything. They don't get to. But sometimes they call back, we've noticed. Because we're 10 or 11 episodes deep and people have been calling back and giving their right of reply, and that's great too, because sometimes we get schooled and other times we go harder on them, and then it's sort of, it's become a little universe of people giving us updates on their life. And I didn't think about this until the other day. It's weirdly, I think it's a bizarre little document of what people are going through right now. And sometimes it's minimal, like it's just, you know, oh, I had a bad date with a guy, I don't know what to do. But other times it's people saying, I don't really know myself, or people don't like me and I don't know what to do about that. And that's kind of interesting in a way.
Yeah, it's funny seeing or hearing the way the, I don't know, like in the earlier episodes, it seemed to be jump in and take the shit. But then the later on ones, you're giving genuine advice and it sort of just weaves in and out of, you know, giving them shit to giving them really like quite nice advice and helpful.
Or give them shit for 10 minutes and then a little bit of advice at
the end. Just a little sweetener on the end.
Well, yeah, I think it would be a bit repetitive if we were just being assholes to these people. And sometimes like when you hear their voice on the phone, you go, God, this person really opening up, or they're taking a risk on calling, and we should be respectful of that.
So are you screening calls or anything?
Well, we listen to them. So we've got the hotline set up and usually Blake and I will listen to them in advance. Becky doesn't. And I don't think she wants to.
Yeah.
I think she prefers to just fly by the seat of her pants and see what comes out.
Yeah.
I don't really prepare anything, but I like to know what I'm in for. So I'll listen to them once or twice and go, that would be a nice one juxtaposed to this one, or these two are about dating, let's not put them together or whatever. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So you're not just having too many like kind of back-to-back on the same theme. You're having to spread that out a bit.
Because to be honest, most of them are people calling up about dating. That's most people's main concern in life, I guess.
Yes.
And fair enough. So yeah, I'll have a listen. I mean, I like listening to them as they come in sometimes. Like I'll get an email, it pops up on my phone, even if I'm out like at the pub or whatever. I'll just go, yes, and I'll kind of sneak off and have a listen to it because it's so weird and private.
And that someone's taking the effort to reach out. Yeah. And everyone's got a dating story.
And how did you get them to start calling up in the first place? I mean,
I think social media.
Yeah, so you put the call out first and then.
Yeah, so we had a listenership. It wasn't huge. Pardon me, this beer. But we had a listenership. It wasn't huge, but they were enough to be pestering us pretty regularly with when are you guys going to do a podcast? When's it coming back?
Yeah.
And we did one episode where we said, here's what the new premise is. Here's the phone number. And I think we put the phone number up on Instagram and Twitter a few times in that week or two before the app came out. And they just started calling. It was slow at first. Once the first few episodes came out, people started hearing the vibe of it and they wanted to be included. And then they started rolling in. It's been pretty consistent since then. Every now and then, though, like last week, I think we only had two calls last week or something. Okay. And that stresses me out. But then one day you check it and there's like five or six all of a sudden.
A particularly hot weekend.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first one that you got?
Oh.
Did that make it on? Or were you like,
I'm sure it did. Oh, yeah, yeah. The first one was, it's in the first episode, and it was a girl saying that she had been given a gift from Secret Santa that she knew that her sister had won in a Instagram competition. Great. That was the first one that came in. And that was great because it was so specific and it wasn't just, I want to find a man or I want to...
And there's layers to it.
Yeah, there was so much going on in there. And now I kind of wish we got it now, because I reckon we could do more with it now that we're 11 episodes deep.
Do you have their numbers? You're going to start calling them back in some special?
You do get their numbers, don't you?
I think we do get their numbers. Yeah. I've never used that power, but I could go back through it and go, hey, remember me? Any updates?
So we also like to get podcast recommendations from our guests. Mm. You've already mentioned the Zodiac one. Do you want to, do you remember the name of that?
The guy's name is Blake Howard. He's a good mate of ours. He's an Australian podcaster. His podcast feed, if I were to describe it to you, which I'm about to, is the most manic sounding thing in the world. His podcast is called One Heat Minute Productions. It started by being a show called One Heat Minute. And the premise was that he would watch 1 minute of the movie Heat every week until he ran out.
And
The Robert De Niro, Pacino. It's actually a great,
it's a fantastic
great film.
One of the greatest high
One of the great films. Yeah. And I could watch it millions of times, never get sick of it. I've never watched it 1 minute at a time, but that's what he did for his first season. And bizarrely, it took off, I think, like Mic Check, because it was crazy niche.
Yeah.
And people would listen to him analyze a minute of a movie at a time for an hour. Now he does, he runs about four of these at a time. So he's got Zodiac, and it's like a minute of Zodiac every week or whatever. He's also got, what's the one that we did? Oh, he's got a... He's got Miami Nice, which is about Miami Vice, obviously. Josie and the Podcats, which is Josie and the Pussycats. There's one Alexi and I did. What's the Watergate one? Redford and Hoffman. Yeah. All the President's Minutes. That's what that one's called.
He's got some taste.
And he's got one out right now called Three Hands, which is an analysis of the movie Two Hands with the director of the movie Two Hands, Gregor Jordan. Oh. It's the two of them talking about Two Hands. I don't know. I don't think it's a minute at a time, but I think it's like four or five episodes of that. So if you look at his podcast feed, which I recommend everyone do, it's crazy. It's broken up into seasons, and every season is just focused on one movie, basically. It's amazing. I've done it. Alexi and I have guested on the All the President's Minutes, and Alexi's been on some of the other ones. It's addictive because it's just like a guy with amazing guests analyzing basically a scene from a movie every week.
Yeah.
And you just kind of get caught up in the minutiae of it. Really good.
How long's an episode of that?
I think like 40 minutes or something. It's pretty good.
Perfect. Yeah.
I'd recommend that. I'd also highly recommend this American podcast series called 99% Invisible, which is a documentary series. How would I describe it? The mission statement of it is to discuss the things in the world around us, the design elements in the world around us that you don't really notice every day. Like, where does the glass from our LCD TVs come from? And it kind of journalistically will break down where that glass is sourced, blah, blah, blah. That's a bad example. But some of them are skate parks, you know, like who designs the bowls? Where did the first bowl come from? Who are the guys that tested the first skate parks? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've been working with them at the moment on a story about yo-yos why the yo-yo blew up in the 90s and kind of became a cool thing again in schoolyard in the 1995 to 1998. So that's been a lot of fun, like just being a journalist for these guys essentially, and hopefully the show comes out at some point. But it's really great. It's kind of history, but it's a bit specific and niche and pop culture and shit you don't even like think about. You're like billboards.
Yeah.
Who made these billboards? When did they first start up? And yeah, it's really good. I love it. I keep recommending it to people. I've become like a bit of a evangelist for 99% Invisible. Keep saying, no, you got to listen to it. It's stuff you look at it and you go, I don't care where that came from. But when you're listening, you're like, I actually care now. This is cool.
Yeah, it's not invisible where their audience comes from. It's absolutely Cam James has been promoting them everywhere.
They don't need my help. They get a lot of listens. They're very big. They're one of the biggest podcasts. But yeah, they can thank me if they want.
Awesome. And any advice for
duos trying to make it in podcasts?
Well, you guys have got great chemistry.
Thank you.
So nothing to say there. You know how to let each other talk, which is nice. Took me a long time to figure that out.
Any tips for that?
I mean, just genuinely listening to each other, which you guys are doing already. And it helps that you guys are friends. I think when you're sitting opposite a stranger, sometimes you're not really listening that much. You're just kind of going like, okay, it looks like they're stopping talking. Now
my
it's time
turn,
for
my
me
turn,
to stop.
My turn.
Yeah. But yeah, when you guys are friends, it's good because you actually do care what the other one is saying. So you are listening. And yeah, you guys are great. I've got no advice. Maybe...
Well, advice for other people, I guess, as well. Just the general...
Okay, don't be a selfish asshole. Be generous. Be giving. Listen. Yes, and when someone throws you an idea, agree with it, even if you don't. And, you know, weaponize your fan base. Weaponize those guys in some way.
So what's next for you and your other pop culture detectives, I guess?
Alexi and I are working on series 3 of the Finding saga.
Yep.
At the moment. Again, we found a couple of stories that we thought were cool and we did a little bit of research on them. And then we narrowed in on one because it just seemed... It just kept, there were more layers. Every time we peeled something back, there was something else that was crazy or it would zig off into a different direction. We've pitched it to ABC. They're into it. So now we need to wait till they have budget, whenever that's going to be.
Awesome.
That's the fun part of podcasting.
Next government.
And waiting for budget.
In Australia, live shows are back and you've got some
stand up.
Yes, stand-up's back. Actually, you know what? I just added shows at the Sydney Comedy Festival.
Let me dates, venues.
Look at my dates and venues. Okay, Sydney Comedy Festival. I'm playing April 29 to May 1, so 3 shows only, at the Enmore Theatre. Not the main room, obviously. One of the smaller rooms.
The intimate one.
The 100-seater. Yeah, I'm in there. 3 nights only in Sydney. Otherwise, I put all my dates up on my Instagram, which is at I am Cameron James. So if you're interested in seeing me do stand-up, come over there and check me out.
Go to that Instagram for Alexi Dancing.
If there's any questions that you want to ask about podcasting that we haven't covered, definitely go up to Cam after the show.
Please.
He'll be more than happy to answer.
I'd love to sit down with you for an hour, one-on-one.
Especially if you're cut. All right, man.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having
Cam.
Me. Man.
Appreciate
it. Cheers.
Behind the Podcast is a partnership between the Australian Podcast Awards and DM Podcasts.